you turn back to Micah chapter 6. Every 6 months, I have a doctor's appointment, and they draw blood, several little vials for different things. One of them is to keep a check on the vitamin D level, trying to get it up, because if you do not have sufficient of that, it doesn't matter what medications you are on to rebuild bones. It doesn't work. Another included in that is to see if some of the medication is causing complications to other parts of the body. And 3 or 4 days after they take the blood, the doctor himself always calls some night and tells me what all's going on. He would be a poor, poor physician if he lied to me. If there was something taking place that I was unaware of, but he wanted to spare my feelings, he would not be a good doctor. You may not like, if the Lord gives help, all, or at least parts, of what I have to say. I want to be faithful to your soul. I have no personal motive in pastoring other than serving God and being a servant to your souls. I hope you'll receive it. It does not come in any way from any bitterness, nothing, but concern, care, love, and hoping that by His grace we all enter into glory. Micah, chapter 6, and verse 8. The message in Micah 6, verse 8. The message is plainly set before us as to that God requires. If He requires it, I want to do it. That is, that you do justly, you love mercy, and you walk humbly with thy God. May the Lord help work in our souls and give you a good hearing. Don't think we'll get down to those three things. That is for you to do justly. But I just want to speak to you for a little while on what the Lord requires of you. Every person here, everyone, is responsible to your Creator to know what He requires of you. Well, I don't read well. Throw it away. I haven't been educated enough. Discard that. I was told that my grandfather Holloway learned to read after his conversion. I do know I was able to see his old Bible and how it was worn out from reading. I know of two more that learned to read after the Lord saved them. So it is not by education. It is not by your mental ability, wherein you know what God requires. Human teaching, learning, or wisdom, humanly speaking, will never enable one to know God or what He requires. No man knoweth the Father but the Son. Same way with the Son. Nobody knows Him but the Father. And if you ever know either one of them, and you must know both, it will be because He revealed Him to your heart. There is no one I know. I'm certain that there may be some in foreign lands, might even be here in this land, places that we don't know about. But nobody I know will be able to stand before God and excuse themselves. Why? They lived as they did, or why they did not live as they should have. You are without excuse. For the invisible things of Him, Romans 1:20, from the foundation of the world, the invisible things of God are clearly seen by that which He has created, so that you are without excuse. Don't anybody here make excuses in your head as to why you are not doing that God requires. Well, if I had a better mate, if God had placed me in an environment that was conducive to Christianity, if I had a better church, or a better preacher. I would have been better. And if so much wasn't in my life, I would be more dedicated than what I am. Every mouth will be stopped before God. Nobody, absolutely nobody, will have an excuse. Read with me from John 3. And verse number 11. Barely. Twice. To get and to hold your attention as to what follows next. One should have been enough. Really, when it comes to us hearing Christ, there need not be a barely preceding the statement. But that you might know the importance, verily, verily I say unto thee, we. Another word caught my attention. Who makes up the we? Well, he could have been referring to the Old Testament saints and to the Old Testament prophets. We speak that we do know. The we might be, as in some places, referring to the Father, to Himself, and to the Spirit. We. For he said, John 5:20, I of myself can do nothing. As I hear, I judge. I speak that I know, for that I know was spoken to me by my Father. So he came to the fullness of humanity, living under the instructions and by the instructions and by the teachings of his Father. You say it was God, he knew all things. Yes, but when he came as an infant, he laid aside everything. And he learned as a human being from his Father. The word which you hear, he said, it's not mine. But it's the Father's which sent me. So certainly the we could be the Trinity. The we could be the disciples. And the called out preachers in the coming generations. I don't take this on myself. He, Jesus said, to the disciples that receives you, receives me. I'm sending you in my name. I'm sending you in my place and under my authority.
And if they receive you, they are receiving me. If they do not receive you, they are not receiving me. And if they are not receiving me, then they are not receiving the Father who sent me. Matthew 10:40. He that hears you hears me. That's why we don't choose this occupation, this task. How under heaven can a man crawl up into the pulpit and for a space of time stand in the very place of Christ before those people? But they do. He that hears you, he said, Luke 10, hears me. And he that despises you, despises me. I know you're thinking that we are but human vessels, sinful creatures at best. Yes, and that none of us will ever reach in this life that state of absolute perfection that God requires. Yes, you're right. But if called, if sent, if gifted, if taught by the Spirit of God, and the Word is opened by the Spirit of God, that preacher stands before you in the place of Christ. If you won't hear me, you won't hear him. But men are fallible. I'm not claiming anything different than that. Elijah was a man subject to like passion as we are, as you are. But when he stood before Ahab and said, by my word, being the mouthpiece of God, you won't see rain for the next 3 years. And that was God telling the king, there will be no rain. And the crowd of Israelites gathered together, and they confronted Moses, Aaron, and their sister Miriam, and said to them, you take too much on you. And if some way you can lessen the preacher's message to just his, not from God, or that he has placed himself in that hour in a place of authority that he shouldn't be, if you can keep the preacher's words from being the word of God to your soul, you kill the validity of the message to your heart. Not valid for me. You've just destroyed the one instrument God sent your way to tell you something. What makes the preacher's message valid? Receive from God. He knows the reality of that is being said. By experience, and he is enabled by the Spirit of God to speak. Now listen, we speak that we do know. I'm talking to your soul about
the reality. Of knowing what God requires. That which we have seen, that which we've heard, looked upon with our eyes and handled, declare we unto you. Let me read this. John 8, then said Jesus unto them, when ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am He, and that I do nothing of myself. This and a few other verses similar to that is what the Jehovah Witnesses like to play upon to tell you that Christ was not God. Jesus was not God. I do nothing of myself, but as my Father has taught me, I speak these things. I tell you that I know. I testify to you of that I have seen. Do not be as in John 3:11, do not hear this charge against you from the Lord. Ye receive not our witness. I have debated for almost a day, beginning yesterday morning until this morning, to mention this to you. But this morning I was given two verses of Scripture which I take that it's all right for me to share. Paul said, I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. That fear was not out of what somebody might say or what somebody might do. That was within the task given, the responsibility laid upon, and the weakness of human flesh to do that is required. 2 Corinthians, I want you to read this one with me. It helped. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And verse number 8. For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble, which came to us in Asia. I was with you in weakness, and in fear, and in trembling. We were pressed out of measure, above strength, in so much that we despaired even of life. That's how low he was. That's how much the wine press had rid him of as far as life. That's how much the fires
in the furnace, God cast all of us that burned away from Him. Despair, didn't know whether I had life or not. Now, if in you listening, I don't fully know 2 Corinthians 1:8, but I have been there. But if in you hearing the next 3, 4, 5 minutes, and all that it stirs in you is some sentimental, emotional feeling, you've missed the entire purpose of what and of why I tell you. I didn't have the physical strength to get down here Wednesday night. If just the labor of getting ready was almost more than I could do. I have not had a good, full breath in almost a week. I was told, I was asked, and I was begged, Brandy, Toby, Joe, the boys calling me all kind of names, begging me to go to the emergency room. Logically thinking, that's where I should have gone. I wasn't up for the test. I wasn't up for anything that they would require of me. But the main reason was I was afraid that I would miss the message of God in this. And that I would lose the experience of facing God. Go get something done for your heart so you can breathe. I will at the end of next week, this week, but not until. You may be thinking that I could with confidence go to bed Wednesday night with the certainty of getting up Thursday morning. I would like to have had that. Well, the Lord's not through with you. There was no answer to that. There is else to be done. There was no... If I had gone to sleep with the confidence that I would be with you this day, then the night and drifting off to sleep would have been of no benefit. It would have been of no use to me. If I knew what tomorrow would bring and that I would be in it, then that I went through in trying to make certain that I was under the mercy of God falling to sleep would have been useless. but that I might know what it is to stand before God. That I might know the brevity of life. And that I might know the uncertainty of going through the valley of the shadow of death. I decided I wouldn't go. I'd just stay home and see. And now I can tell you a little. I am not a parrot. I have not picked up another man's writings in a long time as far as I read the devotionals, as far as commentaries. I want to know from God. And I don't come down here with someone else's notion or opinions. And it was, or it is the condition that has made the question relevant to my own soul. What does God require of you? Now, that's a serious thing, children. In the light of eternity, am I striving to know and to do what God requires? Or have I fallen into a form, a ritual, a pattern? And my heart hasn't been here in a long time. So I told you, and as I told you, I debated, because I don't want emotional, I don't want you emotional about that. I want you in your heart of hearts to come up before God and answer the question. What's God requiring of me? Folk, I think it is the greatest mercy of God to give us an awareness of the frailty of our bodies. Some of you are young, you're in full strength. That doesn't mean anything. God holds your next breath. The next beat of your heart is in the hand of God. Toby went to help a friend work this morning to get through so he could go, the friend, could go and help the family of an 18 or 19 or 20 year old boy that was killed last night. You don't know. But I would hope that what I am asking you now would have just a little bit of weight. And a little bit of sobering to your soul. And that it would give some validity to the message or to the question. What does God require of me? Now, if I had the ability and the power, of which I do not, I would clear your mind, your minds, and I would set you before God to most. God is little more than a figment of their imagination. He's way out yonder. If I had the ability, I would quieten and still your heart and your mind, and I would set you, or if I had the ability, I would set God before you. To whom do you have dealings throughout the week? Some little religious God? I'd set the all-seeing and the all-knowing God before you, which would, for a little space of time, it would leave you in a hushed silence. And a gravity to the question. I don't care if you live 100 more years. You're going to stand before God. But I don't have that power. But if I did, I would hope that just you, right now, you before God, it would make such an impression upon you that it would never be lost the rest of your days here, and that you'd walk out of here determined to know if you are striving to find out what the Lord requires of you. Not your you not to have dealings with your preacher. Personal. That which God requires of us certainly is not that religion has told us. That which God requires of you is not that you've concocted in that gray matter between your two ears. And it is such a serious, serious question. Oh, I fear that the greater percentage in this land, even the greater percentage making up Christendom, is going to stand before God and hear the most awful words that they could ever hear. I know I wondered this morning what the mother and father of that young man thought and felt last night when they heard their son was killed. I wondered. It had to have been awful news. But there's something more awful. Depart. Folks, if hell could release in a million years its victim because they'd been good there, then hell would become a heaven because there was hope there. The judgment that you should be making now of yourself, first of all, it's bias. It's meant towards you. You will always favor you when judgment is brought to your attention. It'll always tell you, well, you may not be as good as some, but you are not as bad as most. And the judgment that you make apart from the Spirit of God, it will never require of you that which God requires. Because you're going to always lower the standard. Because you live in a body of flesh like I do. And this old flesh likes its ease and its comfort. You can't measure this question with the rod of your own making. Not even with the rod that the Baptists make. But that one that is given to the one that is to measure the inside of the temple. For it is only those that get on the inside, not the outer courts. God's not going to measure that. They've got to get on the inside of the temple where God meets them. And we can come down here a million years and never have dealings with God. And we can come down here a million years and walk out every Sunday with somewhat of a little confidence that flesh gives us. Pressed out of measure. And in despair of even life. And I couldn't look back and say, well, Lord, I've been serving you for 40-something years now. Empty-handed was I, lying there. Let me give you a verse. Proverbs 20:10. Divers weights and divers measures. Well, that's talking about when I sell a bushel of corn that I have 56 pounds, if that's correct in that, and that I don't use a false balance. Or when I sell a bushel of peas, it's exactly that. Well, yes. But divers weights and divers measures, both of them alike, are alike abomination to the Lord. So throw away your measuring stick. It's an abomination to God for you to pull out a stick and say, well, I am thus. Or to pull out a scale and try to measure your good deeds. Only right
weight, on the right scale, on the right measurements in this book. Paul said, we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves. You, none of you here would have to look too far to find somebody that was worse than you. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. So back to the power that I don't have and setting God before you. I mean, in reality, you sitting here before God, I don't have that. But if for just 2 minutes, if for just 2 minutes I could get you to stop and actually find yourself before God, it wouldn't be 10 minutes. Before you were out from under that persuasion, that awareness, that condition. You've got to labor every minute you sit in the house of God to hear. It is a work. It probably is a greater work than trying to preach. And taking in that is right. Holding that which is good. Getting rid of all that which is wrong, not right. We'll always run back in mind to a measuring stick we've made for ourselves. If there's any of you here, just one of you, that has in conscience been brought under the spotlight and the searching of the Holy Ghost in you before God, don't blame the devil. Well, I know God's loving and God's kind and God's gracious. And no preacher's going to make me feel guilty or live with condemnation. Because I know what I've heard about God, that God never requires that much of us. You are fooling yourself if you think God requires less than everything you are. You are fooling yourself if you live under the covering of human beings aren't perfect and won't ever be perfect. I know that. But if I use that as an excuse to keep me from doing what God requires, well, I doubt that I know God. If God doesn't require your best, why does He take a whip? If God does not require you come up to His standard, why
why does the Spirit of God make the children conscious of their sin? Of your shortcomings and of your failures. God intends upon every child coming into an exact likeness and behavior of Jesus Christ. Well, preacher, I know we can't get there. I know that too. But you better not let human weakness and frailty be an excuse for you not striving to do what God requires of you. We give God a little nod on Sunday morning, a tip the hat to. And by 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon, we are back in the world, away from God. Well, I won't go anywhere on Sunday evening. Folk, you can be in the middle of the world, sitting in your living room, no television, no radio, nothing on, just sitting there in your living room, and in your mind, you can be somewhere else. It was a tremendous hymn you sang. I'm so glad of the foundation. But do you remember the fifth stanza here? When through fiery trials thy pathway shall lie, God will burn up everything about you that doesn't look like His Son. And God will destroy everything within your heart that you thought was beneficial and needful. He will destroy everything in your heart till you are left with absolutely nothing but faith. And there are times you don't even know if your faith is real. The destruction is so great. But then when he gets it all, or as he gets it all, as he's burning it all, and the storms, bringing the wind and the heavy rains, they'll keep beating upon the rock until one day you look down and you've got nothing in yourself, but you're standing on that solid rock called Jesus Christ. Children, He is worthy of your best. He gave all. Can't we give to Him? And can't we honestly ask ourselves, before the doors open for your exit, what's God requiring of me? I hope God, before He takes you, will have sent enough trials and destroyed so much about you and have brought you into His very presence. I hope He'll give you that awareness that you won't step out into eternity immediately without a God consciousness. It's all but gone, children. You better labor to get that. Tim, you come lead us in our closing hymn.
Joan, you dismiss us.